My stomach constricted with excitement as I realized that a materialization was probably forming. After a while, two spirit arms projected from the cabinet holding a shoe in each hand. One shoe was placed on my lap, the other on Phyllis. Next, Alex's belt and jumper were laid alongside the shoes. A deep, droning hum came from the cabinet. Adula announced himself. Suddenly, we heard Alec, whom we had bound with cords, rise from his chair. The curtains parted and he stepped out of the cabinet, to be greeted by our shocked exclamations. He was minus his trousers. I promptly jumped up and protectively draped my winter coat around him as it was cold in the room now that the fire was only embers. Alec came out of trance. Glancing down at his state of undress, no trousers, belt, shoes or jersey, he wrinkled his brow in puzzlement, exclaiming, "What's going on around here? What's happened?" We switched on the light and drew aside the cabinet curtains. Phyllis, Alec, and I stood in shocked silence, unable to believe our eyes. There, sitting in the chair just as if, 82, Alec's body was still inside them, with the ropes still securely binding them, were his trousers. "Impossible," said Alec. He looked down at his lower torso to confirm that he really was without his trousers. "It's amazing," he added. "I can't understand it. This example of dematerialization and subsequent rematerialization served to prepare us for many such extraordinary happenings which followed later as Alec's physical mediumship developed. As a year, 1940 was a milestone on the path of Alec's mediumship. It took a great leap forward and never looked back, going from strength to strength. White Winger kept saying he would one day walk, talk and mingle with us. So far, nothing had come of this promise. I was surprised because everything he prophesied had always occurred. I assumed we would have to find a materialization medium and have a sitting to make this possible. I heard that famous physical medium Helen Duncan was visiting Barry, a small town only 12 miles from Cardiff. It would be a simple matter for us to go there. At our circle, I put the question to the other sitters and asked if they would be agreeable. Before they could answer, Rowan said, "There is no need to ask this lady. You have the power in your own circle. But you must sit for materialization on another night other than your usual Sunday circle. Be patient." We were delighted at this news, but a problem presented itself. Since I was working at the theater every evening, the materialization circle would have to be held very late after I got home. Bearing this in mind, we chose sitters who lived, 83, near us, who were prepared to sacrifice their sleep. We decided on Tuesday. I explained it would probably be a lengthy business. It had taken 2 years to obtain voice phenomena, I pointed out, and would probably take 7 for this. But they were undeterred. The following Tuesday we assembled at 11 p.m., there were 6 of us, all rather doubtful that anything would happen. The circle commenced in total darkness. To our amazement, the luminous ball began forming in the center of the cabinet curtain. A face could be seen within this mass, not very clearly but still a face. While we pondered who this was, the head began to turn. The feathered headdress of a red Indian could be discerned. I knew then who it was. White Wing. I cried out in joy. At the sound of my voice, the head seemed to come alive. Slowly he turned to face me. His eyes gave a long, searching look. "White Twing, it is you, isn't it?" I said, quite overcome. Slowly he nodded, then faded from sight. I was overwhelmed. Too full for words, I felt tears stinging my eyes. I had seen my beloved White Wing at last. A second ball of luminous ectoplasm formed at the top of the cabinet curtains, and another face appeared. I knew from the oriental features it could only be Chang. Then there was another face at my feet. This time it was Raf, a dead squadron leader who had attached himself to our circle. His plane was shot down over France. We saw his laughing eyes and strong white teeth. "Raf," I exclaimed. "How lovely to see you." Smiling, he too faded away. It was all so breathtaking. I was up in the clouds for days. I realized it only remained for us to continue developing 84, until we had full forms. White Wing told us to put a small red globe in the socket, which we did. The dull light enabled us to see more clearly what transpired. It was interesting to watch the formation of these wonderful spirit phenomena. At first, only heads appeared, but we recognized many faces easily. Then, after some time, came full forms. What an achievement that was! In producing this, the faces became less clear, rather like those on an out-of-focus film. The curtains would part and fully materialized spirit forms stand before us. One night only red Indians appeared. Many different types came, but each was quite distinguishable from the others as regards features, heights and individual characteristics. Yet, with all this, I noticed that the forms did not speak. As the weeks went by, the figures grew stronger and stronger. One night, a beautiful girl stepped from the cabinet, her figure clearly visible through her gossamer robes of ectoplasm. She leaned over to us and whispered, "Con." It was one word, but she had spoken. I could hardly believe it, and was so excited I could scarcely wait to tell Alec about his sister's return. Afterwards many came who managed to speak a few words as the power grew stronger. Mostly these were guides. They, it seemed, were better able to handle this power than loved ones, who often suffered from an excess of emotion. This detracted from their concentration. It was exhilarating to meet the guides face to face and to feel the touch of their hands. There came an evening of exquisite pleasure. The night when Rowan, at last, chose to show himself to us after years of communicating only through his beautiful voice. He, 85, stepped from the cabinet fully formed, draped in a flowing white robe of ectoplasm. Rowan was of Arabic origin. His costume and headgear were draped to resemble his national dress. Of medium height and slender, his thin face displayed remarkably refined features. A close-cropped black, curly beard covered his chin. This tapered to meet his hair on either side of the face at the temples. Rowan's upper lip was covered by a black mustache, which, being short, in no way concealed his lips. There were two characteristics which made an indelible impression on my mind, and, through the years, were always remarked upon by sitters and psychic investigators. First, there were his eyes. These were of the darkest brown, almost black. Disconcertingly they stared into one's own as if looking deep into one's soul, but always with love and gentle understanding. Secondly, his hands were always noticed. They were extraordinarily beautiful, narrow and delicately shaped, with long, slender, tapering fingers. I discovered this as he took my hands in his as a welcome. These two bodily characteristics were totally different from those of the medium. Alec's eyes were deep blue. His hands are broad and capable, with square spatulate fingers. There was absolutely no physical resemblance between my husband and Rowan. Rowan was now in charge of the circle proceedings. As a result of this we coined a name for him, affectionately referring to this guide as the Master of Ceremonies. He was a lovely person, always so calm and gentle. When he came he radiated peace. One could feel the love and harmony he brought at all times. 86. Having obtained materialization, we knew it had come to stay. Now I began to understand about the great work it was said we had to perform. I envisaged the enormous possibilities this type of mediumship would provide for helping the bereaved. Seeing, for some, is believing. What manifested now from the spirit world would be far more convincing than anything we had previously been able to offer the lost and lonely. 87-88, Chapter 7. Gandhi communicates, "One night during our Friday voice circle at the local spiritualist church, I felt the presence of a young soldier who was trying very hard to communicate, but having no success. I sensed his bitter disappointment at this failure. When the circle ended I was drawn to a woman who looked very strained. I felt she was on the verge of a breakdown. I approached her, asking if she would like to attend our Sunday circle. On the night the woman presented herself. Because of her obvious need, I placed her in the front row. We always sat into rows, close to the cabinet. Shortly after we began, a young lad stepped from the cabinet. He held out his arms to the woman, saying, 'Mum, it's Derry.' She gave an anguished cry, jumped from her seat and went to the boy. He put his arms around her. The mother broke down and wept unrestrainedly in her dead son's arms. He gently comforted his mother, saying he was always with her. Then he changed the subject quite unexpectedly by remarking, "I want you to be quite sure this is really me. Look, I've still got it." The solid form took her hand and placed it on his chest. "Can you feel it, Mum?" he asked. Later we learned the boy had had a deformed breast, 89, bone which his family laughingly called his chicken bone. To give his mother positive proof of his identity, he materialized the deformity to convince her. This he certainly did. There was not a dry eye among us as we witnessed this beautiful and touching reunion of a lonely, grieving mother and her dead son. Afterwards she told me that the boy had volunteered for service with the paratroopers. He did not last very long, his plane being shot down over Africa. When she heard the news, the shock was so great the mother could not sleep or eat. She had no desire to continue living. Her doctor was very concerned, but could do nothing to help. After the circle, she was a changed woman, taking part in all the church activities. Later, we had a most unusual spirit visit. During one of our physical circles at all, extremely thin man materialized. He left the cabinet, walked to the end of the room where there was an extra chair and seated himself on it. The figure spoke to us, quickly and urgently, in a tongue of which we had no knowledge. I dearly wished I could understand the words and phrases that fell from his lips. Unexpectedly, a young Belgian man sitting on a chair near the materialized form suddenly said he was a linguist. Conversation flowed freely and easily between the living and the dead. They switched into several different languages, and still spoke to one another with ease. Alec was certainly no linguist. English was the only language he knew. This spirit return was a very evidential point in favor of his mediumship's authenticity. No medium could get away with a situation such as this, unless, of course, he was a fluent linguist. 90. It appeared from the conversation that took place that the tall thin materialization was an Austrian Jew who had been a university language teacher. He was rounded up by the Germans, along with others of his race, and interned in the much dreaded Belsen concentration camp. Here he was submitted to the most ghastly torture. The last diabolical session of Nazi sadism went far beyond his endurance. Mercifully, he died while undergoing the ordeal. Leaving his broken, emaciated body and tormented mind had, he said, been an overwhelming relief. The teacher confessed he still suffered bouts of mental torment when memories of the horrifying atrocities committed on defenseless men, women and children flooded his mind. After talking for some time, the man seemed relieved of some of his tension. He rose from the chair, quietly returned to the cabinet and vanished from sight. Rowan emerged and explained that the guides had purposefully brought the teacher in an attempt to erase the suffering that still lingered in his mind. We sent him on his way with our blessings and promised to keep him in our thoughts. It was an episode, I felt, that would provide irrefutable evidence that we do survive so-called death. At the same circle was a sitter I did not much care for. As he came with a group, I didn't question his being there. I knew the group held themselves responsible for all newcomers they introduced. As a precaution, I placed him at the back of the circle. A Hindu materialized for this man. Pointing at him, he said, "I belong to you." "How can you belong to me?" this sitter asked sarcastically, but the form was not disconcerted. 91. "I became attached to you when you lived in my country," came the calm reply. The figure then spoke to him in Hindi. This seemed to make a profound impression on the rather unpleasant sitter. He suddenly became quiet and thoughtful. Afterwards, when the circle was over and we met in the lounge for tea, he came up to me and said, "Mrs. Harris, I am a police officer. We know about your activities. I thought I would come along and see what it is all about. Frankly, I am amazed at what I have witnessed. First, that Austrian communicator spoke 5 different languages." "You counted them?" I inquired, surprised. "I counted them. There were 5. Then this Hindu chap coming for me. I mean, no one knows I spent many years in India. This fellow spoke the dialect of the place where I lived. Fantastic. Quite unbelievable. I just can't understand it." He shook his head, still puzzled. "I'm glad you were impressed," I smiled. "Rather, I should say, I'm happy you found it to be true and not a fake. A fake, he exploded. How could it be? What about all those spirit forms who were recognized by people in the circle? No, this is the genuine thing, all right. I was relieved we had convinced the police. That was quite something. I felt sure our beloved spirit friends had known of the officer's intentions and specially arranged manifestations to enlighten and convince him. Had this not been so, he could, perhaps, have proved to be difficult. Another time a spirit guide danced and spoke. She did so for Graham Watkins, who simultaneously was introduced to our circle by his wife Marjorie, a brilliant pianist. 92. Because of her professional commitments, she was only able to join us on rare occasions. Graham became one of our regular and trusted sitters. His guide was a Spanish dancer, Conchita. We affectionately shortened this to Chita. She was all woman. There was no hint of the medium's masculinity about her, as Graham testified after she sat on his knee. He held his arm around her. Conchita's proportions were dainty and extremely feminine. She always materialized wearing flowing, filmy robes. The guide would carry a fine gossamer veil made of thin, white ectoplasm. She seemed to have perfect control of the available psychic power. Not only did she hold her solid form for a considerable time, but she simultaneously danced and spoke while being some distance from the cabinet. As Chita danced, moving her limbs gracefully and expertly, her garments would billow out so prettily. Sometimes she threw the veil round Graham's neck and laughingly drew him towards the cabinet, talking to him all the while. Then, planting a gentle kiss on his cheek before leaving, Chita would say she was always looking after him. By way of confirmation, I quote from an article written by the then editor of Two Worlds, Ernest Thompson. He wrote, "At the first seance I had with Alec Harris, 15 spirits materialized that evening. They were tall and short, fat and thin, male and female. Some were visitors from other lands, one being an American Red Indian who stood quite 7 feet tall. As evidence of the genuineness of these 93 manifestations, Rowan, the spirit in charge of the proceedings, materialized, and drawing the cabinet curtains to one side revealed the entranced medium sitting in his corner upon a chair so that we could see them together. On 2 further occasions the materialized forms were visible simultaneously with that of the medium. As further evidence of the genuineness of these materialized forms, Rowan permitted us to witness the entire process of materialization. First of all, there appeared what seemed to be a white rod which thrust itself along the floor from under the cabinet curtains. It moved as if it were alive and stopped about a yard in front of the curtains. The end began to enlarge into a ball until there was a mass of moving, pulsating ectoplasm about the size of a large stone. It became elongated vertically until it was the height of a human being. Gradually, as if it were being sculptured, there appeared a face and then a head. Soon the form was completely human, clothed in ectoplasmic draperies. The materialized spirit began to walk about the room and was able to speak to us. As the power waned, we saw the spirit dissolve and collapse into empty space. Then occurred the most wonderful and beautiful manifestation of the entire seance. A charming Spanish girl gracefully glided through the curtains and enthralled us with a dancing display. It was fascinating to watch her elegant movements. As she turned quickly on her toes, the hem of her billowing white dress flicked my cheek. It felt as soft and sensitive as gossamer. Then she came to the main purpose of her visit, to prove human survival by demonstrating to us that she was indeed, 94, a female and not the medium, a male, masquerading in disguise. Slowly she parted her robes, revealing, beyond all doubt, a nude feminine figure. Quite the most extraordinary phenomenon that happened to Alec was when he was dematerialized and rematerialized in a place outside the seance room. It was a Saturday night. We were giving a circle for the church. I always made a point of including among the sitters one of our regulars. Graham Watkins attended that night. Toy Toy materialized. A man asked the spirit child, "Do you remember the night you took off Alec's trousers?" "Hush," I chided him. But before I could utter another word, Alec's trousers came hurtling through the air. Amid the laughter, I found myself thinking, thank goodness the circle is nearly over. Then Christopher, a spirit friend, requested us all to leave the room very quietly. Knowing Alec did not like being left alone to come out of trance, Graham offered to stay behind with him. I said I would do likewise. But Christopher was emphatic. No, he insisted, we all had to go immediately. Leave the medium's trousers by the cabinet, he added. As the sitters filed out, Graham saw my concern and whispered, don't worry. I will sit just outside the door. When I hear the slightest movement, I'll slip in and seat to Alec. Somewhat relieved, I went downstairs to make the tea. The front door bell rang. I rushed to open the door. As I did so, I could not stifle a little scream as I saw my husband, now out of trance, standing there, a bewildered expression on his face and now wearing his trousers. 95. Graham, who heard my scream, rushed downstairs to investigate. His face registered shock on seeing Alec in the doorway. Graham's expression of amazement was almost comical as he stammered, but, he never. I mean I never. But how? He had not heard anything untoward from the séance room, and was mystified as to how Alec got out. Alec was not much help either. His only explanation was that he suddenly found himself in the front garden, with his trousers on. He had no recollection of getting there. There was no normal way in which Alec could have left the room of his own accord. Graham guarded the door. The only window was permanently closed, fixed by a wooden frame, fitted for blackout purposes. In any case, it had become warped by the sun and was immovable. On checking, it was found to be jam tight. There were no signs it had been tampered with. I was thankful that my husband was all right. Obviously, he had been in good and competent hands. I had to concede that to the spirit world nothing is impossible. In August 1946, Maurice Barbane, the editor of Psychic News, and well-known medium Helen Hughes, visited Cardiff. They approached us to hold a circle for them. So it came to pass that 10 years after Helen had prophesied this very sitting it took place. Here is Mr. Barbane's report. There is in South Wales one of our most remarkable materialization mediums. At his seances spirit forms not, 96, only show themselves in good red light, but hold sustained conversations after having walked about 10 feet from the cabinet. At a sitting which I attended, I saw 30 forms materialize during 2.5 hours. Alec Harris does not use his gift professionally, deriving his income from his work for a government department. The sittings have to be held fairly late at night because his wife is engaged in an orchestra at a local theater. It was not until almost 10:30 p.m. that 27 of us assembled in the seance room. As most of the sitters had come by coach from valleys about 25 miles away, few got to bed before 4 a.m. The story behind the sitting is a fascinating one. About 10 years ago, the medium's wife had a private sitting with Helen Hughes. She was then told that, if she and her husband sat in their home for development, they would one day obtain full-form materializations. Moreover, it was stated that Helen would witness the phenomena. She did at this seance I attended. I was asked beforehand to make a thorough examination of the room, of the cabinet, which was merely some curtains across one corner, and of a medium, who wore only a thin pair of trousers made of black material and a black vest. The black was deliberate, because the forms always appear clothed in dazzlingly white ectoplasm, which I noticed as usual did not reflect the red light. I was so close to the cabinet that several of the forms had to walk over my feet. On several occasions I handled the flowing ectoplasmic draperies, which were soft and silky to the touch. 97. I shook hands with 2 forms. Their hands were firm and normal. Helen Hughes received 2 outstanding proofs. One was the materialization of Douglas Hogg, a Battle of Britain pilot who has proved his survival to his parents through her mediumship. He showed his features distinctly and asked her to stand up so he could talk to her face to face. He gripped her by the hands, thanked her for all she had done, and kissed her, almost with reverence, on the forehead. She had no difficulty in identifying him. Clairvoyantly she has seen him on many occasions. Douglas Hogg also gave a greeting to Charles Glover Botham, another medium through whom he has given evidence of his survival to his parents. The other spirit form to show himself to Helen was her Red Indian guide, a magnificent figure complete with headdress, who gave his name. The cast of his features was typical of his race. Another Red Indian guide, completely different in appearance, manifested and spoke to the medium's 13-year-old son, who has been brought up to regard spirit visitors as a normal part of his life. From the standpoint of evidence, the highlight of this sitting was the materialization of a man known to several people present and particularly to Tom and Mabel Hibbs, leading figures in the South Wales District Council of the Spiritualists National Union. He came right out of the cabinet, walked about 10 feet to the corner of the room and showed himself to Mrs. Hibbs. At first he did not give his name, though asked to do so, because he declared that he ought to be easily, 98, identified by his features and his voice. He was right. Mrs. Hibbs soon recognized this man, who had passed on recently, and who was one of the officials of the district council. To appreciate the remarkable nature of the sitting, you must remember that it is very rare to get materializations venturing beyond the cabinet because there is an invisible lifeline connecting them with the medium. Yet the dead official, as well as several others, walked to the corner of the room, sat in a chair and carried on a long discussion. Some of the forms, after maintaining these conversations, were heard to say that they must return to the cabinet for more rations. They walked back and a few minutes later came out, moved across to the corner of the room, sat down and continued where they had left off. Several turned round and showed their backs, to prove they were solid figures. Once a form stooped to straighten a rug which had been rucked by somebody else. From the spectacular point of view, the most extraordinary incident was the materialization of a girl. She disposed of any suggestion that the results could be explained away by trickery by revealing part of her feminine form. Then one materialization parted the curtains so we could see the figure and the medium at the same time. Frequently throughout the séance I heard some of the guides conversing with the medium in the cabinet. Apparently there are intervals when he is almost conscious. It was an impressive demonstration of materialization at its best. The medium and his wife devote their spare time to spiritualism and make a speciality of healing. Already they have several striking successes to their credit. But no, 99, skeptic can attend one of these materialization seances and still remain a skeptic. I would like to tell of the conjurer who attended one of our seances. Mr. A.G. Fletcher Disborough, a professional stage illusionist, would have been able to judge, if anybody could, whether the materializations he saw were produced by a magician's tricks. He pronounced the spirit forms authentic, calling them unique. He was biased against the phenomena before coming to the circle. A self-declared skeptic, the illusionist disbelieved all the stories he had heard. But, after witnessing several of his loved ones materialize, he was convinced. Fletcher Disborough wrote with conviction to the Liverpool Evening Express, "I examined the cabinet which Alec Harris used. Having been on the stage as an illusionist and magician, I knew exactly where to look for such things as panel and floor escapes, ceiling and wall slides. I was satisfied that nothing could make an exit or an entrance in any way. There was no chance for deception." Of a short, stout man who materialized from the cabinet and went straight to him, giving the name Bertie, he said, "It was my father." In his mumbling way of speaking, he gave a pet name used by my parents. No one but the family knew it. Then a young man came who hobbled and walked with difficulty. He grasped the sitter's hand and said, "Bertie, I am your brother, Walter." The form was recognized immediately by the conjurer. He explained that his brother had had his left ankle shot away in the Boer War. 100. "No one then knew I had a brother," he said. "So who learned his name, and that he hobbled when walking in life? There certainly could have been no deception in this case." Then from the cabinet walked a stiff, upright young fellow. Like the others, the figure went towards the conjurer. Then he swerved and throwing out his arms embraced my wife, saying in a very pathetic voice, "Mother, mother, I'm your son Ronnie." This, apparently, was their third son, born under fire during the Sinn Féin Rising in 1916. He was captured in Singapore Harbour by the Japanese and beheaded. "He turned to me after embracing his mother," said the magician, "and put his head against mine. I recognized his voice. Fletcher Disborough concluded his article with the question, why all these manifestations on my behalf? Because I was an unbeliever.